listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, May 26th already. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. As always, glad to be here. Also glad to have a chuckle or two before the program. We had to segue right in there. It's good.
We keep it light. We keep it fun.
We do.
Welcome to those joining us live. Welcome to those listening to the archives. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Excuse me. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We're going to begin tonight, as always, with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. All right, now on to tonight's broadcast. You know, I have to say, before we get into it, we're very happy to see Wendy back with us. She had a rough couple of weeks.
She sure did. And thanks for messaging me, Wendy. Sending out some energy to you. Wendy got a little sick and ended up being in the hospital for a few days and recovery. And no, it wasn't COVID. So, just for those who might be curious. But we are so glad Wendy is okay.
Very happy to have her
with us.
Very happy that she's with us. Happy that she's doing better. Hope you feel even better every day. And to those longtime listeners, we know that Wendy is our card keeper too. Helps us out a lot. So thank you so much for everything you do. Glad to have you back. All right.
Well,
so tonight.
You said it was, May 26th?
May 26th.
Already? This is the last Wednesday of May 2021.
Yep.
Don't you feel like you're in a fiction novel?
Well, we did come out of a pandemic. We, you know, 2020 was a novel. You started out worrying about World War III, and then you just, you know, slide into a pandemic, and then you have all of the catastrophes that follow that. Societal, you know, nothing, the problems don't go away when you have a pandemic. It only exacerbates things in a lot of ways.
It sure does. But, yeah, and you know, people talk like it's over. It's not over. It's just not putting the same strain on the medical, profession as much as it was.
Well, that's
but it's still
one of the key
there.
Things. Oh, yeah, it absolutely is. And, yeah. You know, one of the great concerns for this has been how strained the healthcare systems are, if they can at least keep up with it. And that's been the great concern about trying to flatten the curve. And when we think about pandemics and things like this, do our minds not kind of first leap to movies, books, things we've seen in literature, you know, The Strain. What was it? It's on the tip of my tongue. It's a movie, has a number, and then monkeys. Do you remember the number?
Yes.
Was it like 19 or 13 or something like that? But they've had umpteen, you know, pandemic movies, books, movies based on books, etc. And of course, all of this is, you know, based on life.
Jamil just said it's 12 monkeys.
Thank you. Chat. Thank you.
There you go. Thanks, Jamil.
It's good number 12. And it's such a strange phenomena. Life creates art. Art then impacts life and helps shape it for human beings. We, in literature, fiction, these are all forms of art. We could even expand this into visual art, music, things like this, because it's really art that shapes the human soul. It's fiction that shapes our reality in many ways by expanding our mind to a greater awareness about what could be possible, seeing through somebody else's eyes. When you read through a book and you kind of learn about these characters, you are experiencing what it might be like to think in a different way. And if you have a wide variety of genres that you like to go through, all the better. I mean, nothing against you if you have a few, but if you have a broad spectrum of what you're reading and taking in through fiction, through stories, through art that is, you know, written with a purpose in many different fields. And so I thought, you know, we have a few kind of broad areas that we're going to go through, and we're just going to kind of have a nice, easygoing, fun conversation as we kind of plod through some pop culture references and some interesting concepts. But we're going to talk about how fiction, of course, has affected technology, and we have some obvious examples there.
Oh, how, Star Trek.
Oh, my favorite. We're going to get into some, we're going to get some Trekdom. We're going to get sued by Paramount.
Star Wars.
But next is how fiction is affecting our culture and societal norms. How fiction affects our spirituality. And one of my favorites that we're going to round out tonight with is how fiction distorts reality.
Mm.
So going back into this, into technology, of course, if you haven't seen a you know, TikTok, Instagram reel, or YouTube video about somebody creating a lightsaber, then I'm sorry, you just haven't been broadening your horizons well enough. And it is... Science fiction has been around throughout the industrialized era. It was in the 19th century. I would argue it kind of got started in this in the 18th century.
Don't you think we could go back to, like, Shakespeare, though?
Well, absolutely. But when it comes to... I don't know that Shakespeare influenced...
I think it was distortions of reality, storytelling and distortions. Wouldn't you say that's a fictionalized...
Oh, yeah. And that's been going on forever. But directly when it comes to, like, technological... innovation, I would say that's only been going on in the form of science fiction for probably a few centuries now, but it does prepare the mind, to prepare society for what is coming on the horizon. We never used to have, you know, fictional stories about extraterrestrial life, or at least we wouldn't call it extraterrestrial life. We would call them gods or some kind of interdimensional beings or, you know, something from another plane. But as our scientific awareness grows, as our awareness of what's out there grows, we realize it might have already happened. We've seen some interesting things on they had, of course, the famous 60 Minutes segment where they were talking about recent UFO sightings that have been verified by the American military, credible sightings. And it's gotten to a kind of a point where everybody has made the joke, all right, the government basically said aliens are real and nobody's flinching. It's because we've been prepared for this for decades. We've had it in fiction. We all kind of accept that aliens are probably out there. The only debate was, have they reached us yet? And I think the debate, we have some hard evidence in terms of sightings, and that's far from definitive proof of what it was. Could have been an interdimensional being just messing with the pilots, creating a false image there. It's when you don't know, you don't know. But interesting and strongly suggestive that there could be something out there. And instead of having a huge impact on society in a way it might have in previous eras, it's just not. There's always been kind of a conspiratorial notion that a lot of ways fiction prepares us for what the cabal or what, the powers that be know is real and will slowly reveal to the masses. And I think that's one that's been a long-standing trope, is that things like Steven Spielberg's, what was it, the, all these famous movie names are on the tip of my tongue tonight. The Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
But your brain is in the back.
Oh, I'm telling you. Well, it always is. It's so much effort to get all the way in the back of my consciousness to get to the good thoughts. But Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where you have that initial kind of experience. And so from there, you have different movies that prepare our culture for the eventuality. And I say there's a logic to it, but of course, circumstantial. Correlation doesn't equal causation. But I do think that as a people, we are much better prepared to accept the fact that we are not alone in this universe than we would have been a century ago. And I think that fiction is owed a lot of credit for that. Being able to...
Well, I think we're assuming that fiction came first.
Well, exactly. Maybe. Life came first, which creates art, and art influences life.
And maybe somebody knew stuff and created all the sci-fi movies and UFO movies. And, I'm just saying. Conspiracy in there.
Well, that's what we were just talking about.
I know. But which comes first, fiction, something we fictionalize, mm-hmm. or reality that we then fictionalize?
Well, I think it could be coincidental, too. I mean, in the sense that I think that you have a lot more alien stories after World War II, after the Foo Fighters chase the atomic bombers and other bombers in the theaters of war, after you start getting...
Area 51.
Sure. Roswell, of course, is really the start of that era of UFO sightings, and that influences fiction. It takes time for human societies, for our collective consciousness to catch up sometimes. I mean, in geological time, in the time of the universe, it's a blink of an eye. But human societies, human civilizations have risen and fallen in the blink of an eye when it comes to cosmic time. I would have to imagine any advanced species would have to have a society that's existed for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years at a highly technological level in order for it to be able to traverse the galaxy. But I'm getting off track, and we have so much to cover tonight.
But Jamil just mentioned science fiction often deals with issues that are happening in reality.
That's
a really good point.
It is.
And how we take an altered view of something and create fiction. I know a lot of fictionalized books are about, let's move away from the science for a minute, about relationships or, social issues. And so people make up stories, but still the ideas came from certain dynamic and, which ways it could go. And right down to Stephen King.
Oh, I mean, really? You gotta love Stephen King. We're gonna be getting into some fandom tonight, when we mix in, metaphysical world with fiction and reality, Stephen King's right up there. And I will credit, some people have been putting their favorite sources of fiction, movies, and things that have changed them. The Soloist from Wendy was a movie that really affected her and helped make her want to make a difference in the world. I would say that in some ways, Stephen King's books, and especially his ability to get inside of somebody's mind and kind of give you their perspective. Under the Dome was one I read, most recently, although it was a few years back, since I've read a good Stephen King novel. It really puts you in the mind of somebody like a sociopath, somebody who justifies and rationalizes everything. It kind of gets you inside the mind of a human being that can think that way. And while it's unfortunate that that has to exist, it does help you prepare to deal with people like that in the real world. Fiction affecting reality. We talked about sci-fi and how it can, Jamil mentioned, it deals with issues that are happening in reality. And I think we're talking about societal issues. Star Trek, a great example, dealing with race, dealing with nationalism, jingoism, and that kind of segues into how fiction affects our culture, affects our societal norms.
Hey, the book 1984, who knew?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was completely over-the-top fiction,
you have to... Go ahead, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
And yet, we've kind of been living that.
Absolutely. I'd say...
So I wonder how much of fiction, we get to, just to inject this, past life recall, future time travelers, there could be some of that mixed into their take on how to educate the now public, you know, when coming back into this time zone. Yeah. I'm just throwing it in there.
Yeah, I feel like we're living in the Diet Coke version of the, you know, Oceana and the book 1984 and Big Brother. It's like all of the ingredients are there to have a dystopian nightmare, which is why it pops up so often in fiction. It's a warning. You know, writers, artists are trying to warn about dangers, or they're trying to point out fallacies. There was a phrase I'd heard. It was essentially that politicians use the truth to tell lies. Artists and writers use lies to tell the truth, meaning fiction. They write a story that doesn't exist, but it tells a truth. Mm-hmm. And it helps us. It helps when you have an artist, somebody that has a moral stand. They will write a book like Uncle Tom's Cabin that had a seminal effect on how... on race relations in the United States, especially at that time. It was one of the first, you know, steps in that direction of greater enlightenment, an ongoing and painfully slow process. But nonetheless, it had an impact. It had a very real impact. And, you know, there are many examples of how fiction has turned popular opinion in the what you might argue is the more moral, more just direction.
You know, you mentioned art a few times, and that's really critical. I know my daughter had just finished an online art history class, and what was so profound for her to really learn about and go in depth with was that art was the storyteller in history. Like, that's how you know about the times, what happened. It's through the art, not through written words. Again, we've talked about this before. Not everybody had access to literature and could read, but it was all through the art, and the art that's passed down. We rely on art, you know, in some forms of glyphs or, you know, symbols and artful drawings to know anything from the Mayan culture to the Egyptian pyramids. So, I mean, art is really critical in how the mind then wants to reflect that or express that and put it forward. Even if it is maybe not entirely truthful, it's still that individual's take and what they're seeing and making art. And I know we're living in a culture that doesn't necessarily support art in the way that it used to, I think.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah.
Theater, you know, having all those aspects of expression, human expression, isn't necessarily in educational systems like it used to be in my day.
Well,
but
they still have required.
Art is the fabric of a culture.
Yeah.
And in that culture, then the culture then has access to dream. You know, and I think that's a lot of where the root of fiction is, the root of dreaming as a human being. Mm-hmm. What do we dream of? And we can say that, you know, Jamil said the imagination is the fun part. But is it imagination or still potential reality? Which is kind of what we're talking about tonight, how fiction affects reality, you know, and what we want to make real. You know, I've often said that anger's not always a bad thing. If you don't like your can opener, you're either going to get so mad you're going to invent a new one or go buy one, you know? And it's when we get frustrated and we're at those turning points, that's when we get most creative.
That's a turning, you know, catalyst for change. Necessity is the mother of innovation and invention. Mm-hmm. And I completely agree with your points. You know, it is... definitely, everything is interconnected. Creativity is interconnected. You know, the ability to think about, be able to take in art, let's say paintings, that is invigorating in a soulful way, which then impacts one's creativity to apply with to whatever their field they're in, be they a creative artist themselves, or be them an engineer, or be they somebody who just has an office job. It leads to greater creativity about how to deal with life, how to think about life. It expands our minds in ways that allow us to better deal with the world around us in almost every way. I would say that art is not a luxury. It is an essential component of humanity. It is an essential component of our growth, of our health as a civilization, as a people. And you're right in that it has declined. Historically, I would say that we reached a zenith. We reached a golden era of basically art being accessible by the masses. We reached a point in the 19th and 20th centuries where, at least in the Western world, you have people that have access to make art, to paint. It is no longer, you know, technology has given you more options. In the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, to find a certain shade of paint was a rarity. To have a certain royal blue, it was only reserved for the best paintings because it was so expensive. And because art was so expensive, you had to have a patron who would sponsor you. And it was dependent on the wealthy, the oligarchy. It became more available to the masses. Mm-hmm. And it became more interactive with the common person, where everybody was able to put art out. People were able to be discovered. And when you cast a wide enough net, you're able to
change a society.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's art to me is that expression of, you know, the spiritual expression, if you will. Mm-hmm. I know that's something we were going to talk about here.
I was just thinking, great segue.
The spirit wanting to be heard, the spirit wanting to be noted. And it's not like in daily life where you want a validation or anything else. There's just something in there. And some of the greatest, you know, artists, whether they're skaters and, you know, other athletes, performers, or whether it's music, canvas, there's something in there that makes somebody very unique and different that busts open. And, of course, then changes the venue, so to speak, or that genre.
Well,
So I'm thinking that that's a spiritual movement.
I
really do.
I think you're right. And I think you're right that there has been a decline when it comes to the youth, the common person being more encouraged to written literature, to theater, to the arts in general. Some funding has been going down when it comes to the national level as the economy shrunk in the Great Recession, as, you know, belts tightened. Often it's the arts that take the hit. But we're also.
Michael, I think a lot of that, though, is because things have become so competitive, and people compete with one another. You know, and
always
wanting that acknowledgement, which isn't spiritually hinged. That's, to me,
that's about the ego.
That exactly. You know, but that needing that 15 minutes of fame, or, you know, wanting the millions, or that competitive edge that diminishes art for so many people.
In some ways.
Because, you know, I can make a lot of art and try selling it, you know? Because then it's other people who get that angle and the twist and the connections and the money to propel art. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, be negative by any stretch, but it's so competitive. And if you don't have that other side of your brain working that's not art, that's more business and pragmatic and, you know, go get them and have the wherewithal or the access to the wherewithal, then you're basically squashed. So your art then and that creativity is minimized. And I think that's what we have a lot of right now, is how that is like a spiritual oppression. And yet, I want to qualify this by saying you can't stop the spirit from expressing itself.
And I was exactly because as we've seen cuts to programs and we've seen some drawbacks, the internet, the wonderful double-edged sword it is, one of the beautiful things it does offer is a way for people to connect, a way for people to show their art, be it comedy, be it painting, be it somebody trying to get their books out. The ability to distribute information and content, art, to be able to distribute that to the world is an amazing revolution. And I will
I
also
agree.
say that, having an ego and being competitive is part of being the human animal. That it comes intrinsically with our biology. It is up to each of us. It is everybody's personal duty to try to increase their awareness and become enlightened beyond their animal instincts, and you can find a more pure form of art, but at the same time, you can't mistake the, competition, the drive of people like Picasso, who, well, I'm not gonna lie, there have been some paintings that I've been exposed to by Picasso that I thought were very interesting, and there have been some that I thought were horrible. But he has a lot of name recognition, and he was also somebody that I think was probably very driven by competition and a drive of ego. But art captures the soul of the artist, or in some ways, what they're trying to showcase, what they're trying to project. And you can look at that as both a, you can look at art as inspirational, what you want to aspire to be, and you can look at art as a cautionary tale, or you can look at an artist and see, or tormented soul. It is the textured spectrum of reality makes it very interesting.
Well, I think one of the more pivotal times was Andy Warhol, and a good example of, he schmoozed with all the right people, right?
Well, and
And he was able to at least earn a living,
right.
and but in the flamboyant character. But his timing was perfect, and he made such an impact, not only in the art community, but in basically in many different cultures. And it kind of gave people permission to be eccentric and radical and expressive. And that's what I mean by that, it's like that movement, that spiritual, kind of wave that comes over and,
It encapsulates the zeitgeist of the moment.
and freedom. And and really it's about that freedom of spirit to be able to do that. But I really do want to approach the downside of this because
Well, one thing I'll say before we move on to
yeah,
the last one
for
is,
sure.
when it comes to, well, it seems like Andy Warhol was the right person for that time, but it seems more like the times choose the people. History does hinge on individuals
Interesting.
many times, but those individuals only exist and only have the power and influence they do because society needs them to, because people look to them in the first place. And an individual in a, societal context, somebody who is pivotal for our history, only has power because people give them that power. Often, society finds the people or cultures or moments, generations, they find the people that they need, or they rather promote those that they need to those
That's
elevated
true.
positions of influence. I think, very much a biological. If you were an anthropologist looking at human beings from as if you were an alien, you would look at this as a, it is an odd duality. Yes, the individual is very important, but at the same time, they only are there because of the inertia of the or the push from the overall society. So that was the only thing that came to my mind.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, that's, there's the yin and the yang and which comes first. And, I love the philosophical view of it too, but it's also more analytical, looking at the psychology and the sociology and, all the other influences, on how fiction affects reality. But reality can often become fictionalized,
Oh, God,
and
yes.
then there's a disconnect. And I think that this is where a lot of people get into trouble, what they think life is supposed to be, what it should be, ought to be, and that frustration, that unhappiness, depression, you know, why am I left out? You know, why can't I have this? Or, you know, so it, or they're in people, I don't know, people in relationships who have an image of what that relationship is, but it isn't at all.
Right.
So they're living in their own fictionalized story.
People who take too much, they don't understand the give and take. They don't understand that when you are exposed to a book, a romance novel, a movie, anything, it is an individual or a group of individuals' perspective on something at that moment in time. And the world is a very big and complex place. Things are shifting all the time, and you have to take things with a grain of salt.
Oh, well, emotions don't see that.
Yeah.
See? That's the issue.
Experience and wisdom to get to that point, and those are things you have to fight for in life. So we have I think this was a great point that you had brought up, and I'm so happy that you're addressing it, Dr. Hunter, because, you know, just connected so much. You had, we were talking about it prior to introducing ourselves prior to the broadcast, and I was just thinking that's perfect, but, you know, perfect way to talk about this, because it is the yin and yang at its core.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, living in the now, reality is subjective. Like, it's your environment on your part of the planet, you know, what's real, what's not real. And I think when we meet people we disagree with, maybe, whether it's about religion or parenting or anything, we think they're in some kind of fiction story and not in reality, you know, but what's reality?
Well, all
so
I know...
I think we have to draw these lines very carefully.
Yeah. I was just going to say, all I know is the people that disagree with me are morally inferior and wrong. I'm sorry, let's go ahead.
That's funny. Oh, God, we have to record them.
No, I'm kidding. they know I'm kidding.
I appreciate this. And next week, this is a good segue into a topic. I finally found the term for it, and it's called apophenia. And it's how someone can get two totally random ideas and put them into one. Now we can apply that to conspiracy theorists or even in our daily lives, so we're not making sense and using deductive and inductive reasoning. So apophenia is going to be our topic and how that affects our thinking.
Really,
but we're also going to talk about, which Dr. Kelly so eloquently puts together, about deductive and inductive reasoning. So, and how to kind of sort out reality. So I'm looking forward to that discussion next week, Michael.
I am too. We, again, talking about it prior to the broadcast, and we kind of explored this topic. You know, I had to Google it because it's something that I hadn't heard of before, and I think it is really fascinating. I'm very much looking forward to that discussion. And I think that means we've gotten to that time of the evening, in fact, a little bit past. It's time to draw cards. So, as you like, throw your name in chat. We'll give you a little bit of time to catch up. We know there's a little lag time between our broadcast and when you hear it. So, great talk tonight. I really love going over the different topics. I mean, I loved geeking out on sci-fi and just talking about the, you know, chicken and the egg, you know, the yin and the yang, the different avenues of fiction, of art, shaping reality, shaping the world. And it is such a wonderful thing that human beings have a hand in shaping our futures, more so than any other animal that we've seen on this earth so far. But that's all the vamping I have to do, because we have some names flowing in.
We do. So I think we have Edward up first.
All right. And Dr. Edward, I'm going to pull from the Inner Oracle deck, and let's see what you get. We have number 35, one planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. All right, let's see. Divine energy lives in all things. Diversity in nature and among humanity is not an evolutionary mistake. It is an evolutionary constant. This card advocates equality, peace, unity, healthy life skills, higher consciousness, and spiritual enlightenment. It is critical for our spiritual evolution that we display tolerance and equality towards others as well as ourselves. Remember, you are of divine energy.
You know, Edward, this is a different one for you. You've got the Queen of Clubs. Now, one planet, one race, one destiny, it reminds me of Mother Earth. You know, it's that the woman, the overseer, that Earth connection. So I'm going to go way out on a limb here and say you might be philosophizing a little bit lately, or being reflective and looking at environmental issues, or being more conscientious in that way, and at least just kind of looking into that. You know what I mean? It's just thinking about it. And it does definitely reference some, you know, woman energy here, and the feminine, and which largely reflects that intuition, that sensory side of yourself. So I feel a shift in your energy here. That's a really good thing. So I hope that makes sense to you in some way.
Very cool message. So. I'm loving it. I just had a corporate slogan come out of my mouth. Anyway. We have, Michael. I believe Michael is the first name, a fellow Michael in chat. Yeah. At least I'm hoping. Yeah. If I got that right, you can feel free to correct me. We'll throw it out there. But number 14, energy shift in new chapter.
All right.
Let's see. Energy shifts are a natural result from increased awareness, knowledge, and new attitudes that naturally open new chapters in one's life. It's an excellent time to clarify your vision during this time of shifting energy. Reflect, gather your energy, breathe, and step forward with a renewed sense of direction. Out with the old and in with the new.
Well, Michael, the Nine of Spades indicates a moment of grieving, a moment of reflection, a moment of making those changes. You know, like as that energy shift, a new chapter comes, you know, we look back, we take inventory. Sometimes it's sad to leave some things behind. And then you gather your forces, gather your spirits, and then you're able to move forward. So I think what these two cards are kind of combining to tell you is that you're in a shift, and it's perfectly natural to take inventory and feel that deep down. And to be a little scared, I guess, for a moment, too. That's natural, you know, because that, I don't know where I'm going. And, but you got this. You do. You've got this. So it's that segue to moving forward. I like it myself, but I know it's not always pleasant for some people. So I hope that makes sense to you, Michael.
Very nice. Good message. All Wendy. Right.
Wendy.
Glad to have you. Wendy, our resident card keeper. Let's see if you've gotten this one before. Number 7, self-mastery.
I love that.
To know who you are and why you are who you are is self-actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self-determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your behavior is self-control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery, towards the path of self-completeness.
Well, the Eight of Hearts, it's one of those cards I reference as a back card. You know, it's like you can't really see where you're going. You don't have a lot of clarity, but you keep moving forward. So self-mastery is like you're gaining more autonomy, more sense of self. And maybe it doesn't always fit in with everybody, Wendy, and you don't know exactly where this is taking you, except that it's really true to your spirit. So keep moving forward, even if you feel like you're in the dark. You know, and having a couple of health scares like you have had, that can make us reflective too. So, you know, it's just a moment, but keep going. Keep moving forward.
All right. Very nice.
Audra.
I do believe we have Jamil first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed it.
Jamil. All right. And Jamil, I have number 22, think for yourself.
Okay.
Better understanding one's own mind brings one closer to honesty and self-responsibility. Thinking for yourself prevents being swayed by the potentially unhealthy thinking of others, as well as outside popular beliefs, simply for popularity's sake. If you don't think for yourself, you sacrifice your identity for someone else's identity. This may be a time to exercise critical thinking in order to best determine and listen to your own truth. Great card. I think it really ties into that last aspect of allowing fiction to distort one's reality or what the popular opinion is.
Well, what I'm noticing about tonight's cards, and by the way, happy full moon, everybody, is they're more fundamental, you know, more kind of grounded into real life things. And for you, Jamil, I pulled the Seven of Clubs, you know, that supports that think for yourself. And this is buffer, you know, it's like that protective boundary thing, buffer that negativity around you. Don't take other people's words to heart, you know, especially people who are disagreeable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you know, put your hand up and say, no thanks, or no, I don't want to talk about that, or, oh, gee, I'm sorry, I have things to do. So it's being a little bit in self-preservation. And I would say, put a white light around yourself and never mind. All right.
Good message.
And by the way, thanks everybody for the feedback. You know, again, sometimes we go right out in a limb here, literally out in a limb, and not quite sure, just trusting purely intuitive thoughts and, you know, kind of what these symbols mm-hmm. are speaking to us and trying to make sense of them in a real life kind of way. So I appreciate the feedback. So now we have Audra.
We do. And, card keeper Wendy pointing out that Jamil's actually had both of those cards not too long ago, so some interesting repeats.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if we have a pattern for Audra. Audra, number 19, invoke the counselor within.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There are times to seek advice from others as a means of summoning your own truth, but the answers you seek lie deep within. Look there. This may be a time to remind yourself not to codependently surrender your power to anyone or anything outside of yourself. Always determine your own truth and live according to the path that is right for you. Good message.
Well, justice is in support of that, Audra.
Oh, I love that.
No. You know, the fairness, equitability, balance, and, you know, looking at that and maintaining that within yourself. Equally, I want to say that we don't always see that outside of ourselves. So you have to be true to you. So invoking the counselor within is, you know, knowing when to speak up and knowing when it's not our business and don't give unsolicited advice, that kind of thing, which is tough. I know, tough sometimes.
Especially for me.
But so I think what we have to know is that justice comes in all forms, and sometimes you just have to let it be to the cosmic, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's just the way it goes. But invoking the counselor within, again, I think you've got this, you got a good balance going on inside yourself, and you know what you can live with. So that's a really profound message for you.
Very nice. All right. And we have Ronaldo next.
We do.
All right. And we have a wild card this evening. Wild card number 4, Unknowable.
My favorite.
This is a good one. There are mysteries in the universe, and not all can be known or predicted. A focus of deliberate intent can reveal valuable unforeseen knowledge for what lay ahead. Remember, we only see what we know and believe. The universe is unfolding in ways that are unknowable to your existing ways of thinking. Change your mind, and you change your world. Change your mind, and what was once unknowable may now be knowable. Listen to the subtle leadings and incitations of your higher self. What was once unknowable is now knowable. Remain flexible and open to change.
Ronaldo, I got the Ten of Diamonds on this. So Ten of Pentacles in tarot language. I really like that. One of the first thing that comes to mind is like a change in work, change in career. Maybe you're a little nervous about that. It's like there's a shift, but I see this as a really positive one. And I see that there's good remuneration coming with that, compensation, And I'm seeing some really good days ahead. And I'm not saying it's not good now. I'm just saying that even improved. So it's really about trusting. Trust yourself that you've got this. And what I want to encourage you is that you can keep learning. Like, you have the capacity to do that, and you're going to catch on really fast. So what was unknowable, it's now knowable. So I'm really encouraged by that. I get kind of goosebumps. It's good.
That's a great message.
It is.
All right. So I think that's everybody. I was just taking another look through the chat. We're going to be wrapping up here. So if we didn't see your name, throw it out again, and we'll do one real quick.
I remind everybody about the full moon, it's I think a Saturn return retrograde, it's an eclipse, it's a blue moon, it's a pretty big one. A lot of people are talking about energy shifts in this full moon.
Are you saying it's the full moon that I'm acting so weird and unusual?
No more than usual.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Sorry.
It's not like we can have a full moon every day. I don't have any excuse. So.
I love a full moon.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel it most at ease during a full moon. It's like energy is flowing. Dr. Stephen said Mercury is retrograde also. I think that if we're going to kind of encapsulate what the message is, it is getting real. That's what a lot of people are talking about, these planets aligning in the moon energy, mm-hmm. is how we're getting real with ourselves. At least we hope we do.
And Mercury's going in the wrong direction.
Real. Yeah, I know.
Been in the wrong way in perspective to us at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like it myself, and I'm always curious what's around the corner after a full moon, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be great fodder and great, you know, great material for next week's topic.
It is.
Getting into apophenia. I've had to kind of learn how to say that word, apophenia. So it's going to be a great discussion next week. We're going to be able to talk about how we form these connections. And I think that we can delve both into maybe some foolish connections that people have formed between unrelated things. And then, of course, maybe dive into some intuitive connections between seemingly unrelated things. So I think
good
it's
idea.
Going to be an interesting one. I think, connection of the full moon and behavior, great example. So let's go ahead and look forward to that conversation next week. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. So glad to have Wendy, our card keeper, back with us tonight. We always appreciate the feedback we get from everyone in the chat. We really appreciate it. It makes it a much better experience, I think, for everybody, listeners and us. So thank you for everything that you contribute. And any last thoughts, Dr. Hunter?
No, I'm glad to be here. Happy full moon, everybody. Happy end of May. We will see you in June.
We'll see you next month.
Next month.
Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.